Welcome, welcome, welcome to the SubHub podcast. I'm Danny Moreno.
And I'm MK Sullivan. And today we are going to go over the wild weekend that was Canyon's. A very successful weekend.
Very successful. Exactly. Yeah. A big weekend for the SubHub. Yeah. If you were listening to our past episodes, you knew that this was coming up for both of us. MK had an unfortunate drop at Black Canyons, and this was my first trail race of the season, coming off two road half marathons. So needless to say, we are very excited and we are very stoked with the result. How is your body doing today in this moment?
I am on the struggle bus, but not for the reasons that you might think. My legs, actually, I can walk down the stairs forward without my hands already, which is
without your hands.
Yesterday, I was literally using both hands on the sides of the walls to like carry myself down. Today, I did not have to do that, but I am covered in poison oak. I have it on my eye. I have it on my chin. I've got it on my belly, all over my quads, like all over my shins. I am so miserable. But you know, somebody asked me, was it worth it for that golden ticket? And I said, I'm not sure. Because I was awake until 4 a.m. last night. So I guess this morning, not even last night. But yeah, body doesn't feel as bad as it did yesterday, which was the day after the race. But holy shit, am I itchy.
I know. I saw a reel with Tim Tolfsen as well. And it's like good pictures of him running. And then like the last three are just like red swollenness of like his butt cheek and like his hip and body. And yeah, I, knock on wood, haven't felt anything yet. I feel like something on my hip. So our detective, back to our detective mode, we think it was the driver's flat.
Yeah. I mean, it was like there was no avoiding it. It was all over the trail. The reason I have it on my eyeball is because it was probably so high that it was on my hands, is my guess. And I probably wiped my face at some point. It's a dream out here, you know? We're really thriving.
We are living the dream.
But how are you feeling? How's your body?
Oh, man. Well, yesterday when I woke up in Auburn, because we're both back home now, we were in this place, my husband and I, Mike and I, with the Hemmings, and both of our rooms were upstairs, and it was kind of like an old Victorian type of house, very common in Auburn, and these steep stairs. And I just kind of like yelled from my bed. I was like, yo, you still here? And Eli was like, yeah, we're still here. I was like, bruh, I feel like I got hit by a truck. My body just felt like it could not move. And it just was the slowest stair walk down. Yeah. And then, you know, driving, everything kind of locks up as well. But I just felt like, honestly, like the day after my bachelorette party, but not extremely hungover, just like went real hard. And then, yeah, being back home again today, I was very, very sore waking up, but it's now like exponentially getting better each hour, which is really nice. Yeah. But honestly, it's so satisfying, because that's when you're like, you know what? I literally left every ounce of my soul and body out there.
Yeah. I'm curious, because I think if you had asked me 2 years ago, I would have told you that like a mountain race, like a real mountain race, would beat me up like crazy. But I actually think now that these, because Canyons for both of us, 50K and 100K, was so runnable.
Yeah.
I am in much more discomfort from that than I think I am from like hammering downhills in Chamonix. I don't know about you.
Oh, yeah, totally. For me, normally with mountain marathons and mountain races, it's like almost lower on the quad and like all the stabilizers, like the abductor, adductor, yeah, etc. But with these races, the whole posterior change, like that's what's fired up for me, is really actually running the entire time, the hamstrings and stuff like that. And the whole back, honestly, just like holding yourself up, because your form, like, I mean, I only bent over to hike for maybe like 4 minutes of the whole race in total, maybe less than that. But I 100% agree. I know people don't sleep on these runnable trail races. They mess you up.
Yeah. Basically. Yesterday I was like, it was like all the muscles around my spine were like anytime I would turn or like try to like move, I was like, I can't breathe. I'm so tight. Oh my God.
Yeah. And like the core muscles too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which you're like, I wasn't doing that much technical terrain. Like, what was I stabilizing? It's like, oh, I was trying to run.
Yeah. I was trying to keep my butt underneath my back instead of like behind it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
oh man.
It's wild out there.
But that's how our bodies are doing. We have some fun stuff to talk about. So buckle in. This is probably more of like a long run episode. Maybe you're taking a drive on a scenic highway. Maybe you're commuting to and from home. But we just want to do the weekend justice. I was talking to my friend Abby Hall, who's also a teammate, and it's like, it's very rare that in an entire weekend, at least for me, I feel everyone that I love and have such a special connection to had a good, great day.
It was like, a great day.
You got second. Tim crushed it in six. Rod, who is basically my mountain brother, won. He freaking won the Canyons 100K. Going back to you, debut in second. Shut the door, freak. That's so cool. And then not freak you, freak that. I don't know why. I was trying to avoid the word F-U-C-K.
That's right.
But and then my whole Tarek's teammates, like everyone crushed it. Like a vast majority. There's always gonna be some rough days, but like, yeah. And so I'm just trying to not take that for granted too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a fun weekend. But that's what I mean, it's part of the reason why I picked Canyons over Zagama at the end is like, honestly, being on like home soil or like kind of being, because neither of us are from Auburn, but we both raced there enough. And also we're like semi-local in a way that like, not only did we have a lot of people there that we knew that were racing, but I'm sure you experienced this too. Like a lot of people out there knew who we were because we're Americans and we're from the West Coast. So it's like, it was such a cool like weekend to just like have a good day because everybody was like, yeah, go MK. And I'm like, I don't know who you are, but thank you so much.
Yeah. Yeah. No, 100%. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. And part of that fam was also getting to see Bill, the co-founder of Never Second. They had a booth there. If you listen to our last episode, we explained, that they were going to be there. They're going to be at some other trail races this year. I don't know what their next one is going to be, honestly. Maybe YouTube? No, probably was.
I think they're going to Speed Goat.
Oh, sick.
I think is the next one, if I remember correctly. But yeah, it was great to meet Bill in person. Because actually, Danny and I have never met Bill in person. We've always just talked to them over the phone and stuff or through email. And let me tell you, he hooked it up with me the day before because I did not bring enough caffeinated gels. Mm-hmm. And so I was like sprinting back to the expo before he left. I was like, can I get some caffeine? He's like, yes, dude, take as much as you need.
That's awesome. I love that. If you had a chance to go by the booth to try some of the Never Second products, we will get into what MK did as her fueling strategy, cough Never Second in a little bit. But yeah, again, consider using our code SUBHUB25. If you got to try some, you really like it, or you become even more curious considering both Katie Scheid and MK went 1-2 and are both very avid Never Second users, which is, you know, proof is in the pudding.
There's something in the water and it's probably C30.
Yeah. Is another thing about the race weekend, before we get into the results and get more of a flow going, is thanks to the race organization and volunteers, MK and I both had some time in Auburn. I did a training camp with Tony McCann, Ingveld Kasperson. MK went out there a couple times for long runs. And let me tell you, those trails were riddled with down trees. And it looked like they weren't even there on race day. It's wild how much work they did.
When I dropped down from Forest Hill onto the Cal Road trail, I was like fully ready for those like really terrible trees that we were like going over.
Yeah.
I was like, this is going to be so much harder than it was when I was here last time. And I turned the corner. I was like, oh, hell yeah. There's no trees.
Yeah. So big thanks to everyone who, you know, spent hours. It probably took hours.
Oh,
and they probably, I hope they didn't get poison oak as bad, but it's kind of impossible to probably avoid. So thank you for sacrificing yourself for the sake of the race. So that's greatly appreciated. And then another kind of announcement is, you want to tell the folks about what's coming out in a couple of days?
Yeah, it is almost already May, which is crazy. When we first started doing this, we were like, oh yeah, once a month, like that'll be nothing. But it's already time for another newsletter. And so yeah, SubHub Headlines comes out May 1st. We'll be highlighting all the races that have happened recently. We talked with Roberto De Lorenzi a bit and just letting you guys know what's up next as well. So please, please, please go and subscribe to that newsletter. We're having a lot of fun with it. We're trying to be creative and give you guys our hot takes and, you know, try to just help you keep up with all these races. Cause honestly, there's so much going on and the real season hasn't even started in terms of like every weekend being packed with something.
Yeah. So. I mean, already the next 2 weekends there's Sky Race, Weekend Off, Sky Race, Sagama, Broken Arrow, Western States.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's what the headlines is for. So we'll post that again in our stories, but you can always click the link in our bio area to subscribe to that. So,
yep. Yes.
All right. So the results first, just to kind of knock these out for the Sub Ultra Focus. Wow, sorry. I'm having a rough time talking today.
Yeah, we apologize. This is a Monday after we both raced. And like, I can tell you my brain is on like we're maybe up to 4 to 5 out of 10 right now. I don't know where Danny's at, but bear with us.
So there was a 25K. Was that also on Sunday? No, that Saturday?
Yeah, that was Saturday. I think they started after you guys.
They started an hour after us. But Talon Hole ended up taking the win in the men's race. He ran a blistering 125.59. Richard Skogsberg ran 131.04. Eric Hamill ran 132.06. So yeah, there's roughly a 7-minute gap between first and third. And then on the women's side, Bailey Costantine ran 155.52. Amanda Wiggenhorn ran 158.55, and then Natalie Chirgwin ran 201.35. So congrats to those 25K baddies. Way to get out there.
Hell yeah. And then in the 50K, which is the race that Danny competed in this weekend, we'll start with the men actually, but Eli Hemming won the race in 3:25.23. Danny Jones was hot on his heels for a lot of the race and ended up finishing in 3:28.03. And then right behind him was Cole Watson at 3:32.51. And then our very own Danny Moreno won the 50K on the women's side in 3:52.54. Jennifer Lichter was 3:57.49 and Tabor Hemming 3:59.44.
Yeah. Yep. That race, it was great. It was great. Is everything I kind of hoped it would be. And I just want to point out Eli Hemming, his average pace was 6:29.
That's so gross.
That's so gross. 6:29 for almost 32 miles.
Just... I ran like 1 mile at 6:29.
That's you were running Eli Hemming's pace. Good job.
Yeah. It's like those, like, how long could you run Eliud Kipchoge's pace?
yeah, exactly. We bring like a treadmill, but it's uphill.
Yeah.
Yeah. And his gap, it was very, very solid. But there's this section between miles 5 and 13 where he was between 5:27 and basically 5:50 pace for his gap. It's wild. Anyway,
that's
so yeah.
So crazy.
And for Dan Jones, he's racing Western States. For him to come only 2 minutes behind Eli, I thought that was really impressive. And then Cole Watson too. Notable people who didn't show up. Chad Hall, thanks for messing up all of our free trails with love. Chad, come on.
I hope you're okay, but like, come on, man.
I was like, damn it, Chad. No, it's okay. It still was a great race. Seth Rowling was right out there. Was there another guy that ended up? I think that was like the most notable. And then the women's side, Molly Seidel ended up pulling out to give her knee some more time to recover. So she didn't end up showing up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So fast races all around.
Fast races all around, all day.
If you didn't know it already, Auburn is super runnable. Don't expect to be hiking too much if you run a race out there because, ouch.
Totally. Some other themes we wanted to touch upon. Canyons. I guess we should spend a little bit more time on these. The first one is Canyons is no longer the major. It's Kodiak. I'm very curious why that is, because like Canyons being a golden ticket race and a major just seemed like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like people can double up, which is nice. Like you don't have to run a golden ticket race and a qualifier for CCC or OCC or whatever. It's like, yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. I didn't run the Kodiak race, but like you did and my husband Tommy ran the 100K, and like comparatively, I have heard that the courses were like the Canyons is just a better course. But
yeah,
I mean, you fly into LA, which I think for a lot of people is like fun. So yeah, it'll be curious. My biggest issue with it is that, so this, it will be the 2025 major, which qualifies you for 2026, but the major is happening. It'll be in October. Unless they change it, it'll be in October of 2025. UTMB week, last week of August. September is the like last two races of Golden Trail. And last, you know, chances for skyrunning as well. And it's the World Championships in 2025. And then in October, you're going to have Golden Trail Finals, Skyrunning Finals, WMRA Finals, and a North American Major. I don't know. It just seems like...
And World April Championship was, in 2025.
Yeah. April was a way better time frame, in my opinion. So I'm just curious to see, like, who ends up being able to race that.
Totally. I liked the course at Kodiak. I thought it was fun. So I think it just depends on the athlete. And I thought the atmosphere was cool. Like it's not cool. It's not at Canyon Set. Maybe this will help them. But that was my first concern immediately, was like, that felt like such a push last year. And I didn't even race OCC, or I didn't have a huge filled year. And I could only imagine everyone else who, is participating in other series. It's just, and for the majors, you also have Doi Ethan on too, which is in December, November.
December. Yeah. Unless those they are change just that
really
one too.
Close. Yeah. So maybe they'll change that one too, but those are really close right now.
The biggest thing for me is definitely like UTMB, less than a month later, Worlds, less than a month later, North American Major. Like,
yeah, and Springland Skyrunner and Golden Trail Finals.
Yeah. So especially for like the 50K athletes who can race that frequently, like people are going to get hurt.
Yeah, people are going to get hurt for sure. Yeah, so mixed feeling. It's not towards
towards Kodiak.
It's not Kodiak itself. It's more just like time. UTMB as a whole. Part of me too thinks it's this ongoing battle between the series trying to get you to commit to them. It's like, yeah, you can't do Golden Trail and UTMB. What are you going to choose?
Such a bummer.
Yeah. You can't do Worlds and Kodiak. What are you going to choose?
Yeah. Like, I mean, you already can't really do like Worlds and UTMB. Like you have to choose between those two, like in 2025, if you make the team, which obviously it's a much smaller percentage, you know, five people make the team, but it's like still kind of a bummer.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Anyways, we just want to touch about that. Those are our first reactions. We'll see how things develop. They might change Thailand. None of those other dates are changing, so that's about it. Another theme we wanted to touch upon was the live stream. Okay. Hot take. UTMB suck. No, I shouldn't say it straight up. Their live stream is good and has a lot of room to improve, but like you can't watch it past the actual race, which is really frustrating. Like I had some family that wants to watch the race and it's nowhere to be found. There's like a little 100K recap, but why send the 50K people emails to do certain media promotions? Why ask us to do a bunch of stuff and you can't do the minimum of just having our race up?
So like on YouTube.
On YouTube. It's
like
you
should just be on YouTube like any other. Yeah. And maybe it will happen later and we just don't know. Like this is still Monday. So
Yeah.
You know, maybe, who knows? But yeah, it's like, not everybody's going to be able to like sit down on a Saturday and like watch us race. Like, you know, we have family who have children and they like have soccer games in the morning and then they want to watch the race and it's like, oh, it's gone. So that's kind of a bummer. But the big thing that I saw, and obviously neither of us were watching, we were racing, was kind of like a lack of women's coverage. And in the 100K, it's like, I only kind of get it because we were way more spread out than the men were, obviously. But in the 50K, that's not the case. And like, I don't know exactly what happened, but my mom was pissed because apparently after my interview, so I finished second, but I was the first golden ticket winner. There was still one more golden ticket to be handed out. I did my interview. They stopped the coverage of the women. So Anna Cassius gets her golden ticket and doesn't even get like a moment on screen.
It's absurd. That's so crazy. Disappointing.
Like, you got to make it through top 10 women. If top 10 women are qualifying for your race, we got to see who's qualifying. We got to see through top 10. Like, that should just be like a minimum requirement.
Yeah. I can't imagine what sort of reason they had to do that. It's, if you have people there, just, I don't know, have shifts.
It was 3 p.m.
Switching around. Yeah.
It's not like it was like 8 p.m. It was 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, it's not like the middle of the night or something.
No.
Yeah, so that was extremely disappointing. I also, that's part of the reason why I wanted to watch live coverage too, because I had seen some stuff on Instagram, on stories and stuff like that, of people being like, yo, where's the rest of the women? And I wanted to see it so I could see it for myself. So there are some great stories of the rest of the women. Anna Cassius ended up getting third. She ended up accepting the golden ticket. She was a strong favorite going into the race, so it was really cool to see her get that golden ticket. Obviously, MK got second. And then after her was Anna McKenna, right? Yeah.
No, it was, what's her name? Corinth?
Oh, yeah. Kareth Arnold.
Kareth?
Yeah.
Who is 7 months postpartum, you guys. 7 months postpartum. Just finished fourth.
Oh my gosh, that is so inspiring.
So cool.
That's wild.
And then in fifth, yeah, Anna McKenna.
Yeah. 7 months. Dang. She got
and
six
her kids
at
were
Black Canyons. Oh, yeah, because she was pregnant. I'm like, she did Black Canyon 60K last year and was sixth. Third at Bandera that same year. Wow, that's super cool.
Her kids were out on the course too, and they were so cute. I remember passing her husband with the baby, and I was like, oh my God, cute. And I just like kept running.
They're like, that lady's crazy.
Yeah.
Anna McKenna, frequent runner of these 100K races. She was eighth at Black Canyons, ended up coming back for fifth, which is awesome. And she came from, there was a couple people from Australia, which is pretty cool. Erin Clark finished after her. Really cool to see Erin.
Laura Hansen.
Oh, Laura Hansen. Sorry.
Yeah. And then Erin Clark.
And then Erin Clark returning from, when was her last race actually?
I feel like it was CCC 2 years ago. Oh, no. It was Lake Sonoma 50. She won Lake Sonoma 50.
Oh, yeah.
Last year.
With these UTMB indexes, it's really annoying because American races aren't always uploaded. And so it kind of looks like she has a gap. But yeah, she had Lake Sonoma in there. Laura Hansen's a crusher. That was a great race for her.
Mm-hmm.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
I hope she's stoked about that.
And that was Jade Bellsberg and Arden Young, who finished out the top 10 for the women.
Oh, and Marta Winta from Poland was after Erin Clark.
And we missed Katie. Katie Scheid won the whole damn thing and absolutely crushed it. Got sixth overall, was hunting down those dudes.
Yeah.
No surprise.
I went to go cheer on some of our teammates because Petter was making a hard push. Mm-hmm. And then Kirsch was in fifth. And I was running back because I wanted to see Rod and then see how you were doing. And I didn't have my phone. And so I was running. And I was running up the very, very last hill, the actual last one before you cross the white bridge and start going downhill.
Yeah.
And I was running with my team manager, and she looks back. She's like, "I think that's Katie." I was like, "No way. That woman's running really fast." She's like, "No, it's Katie." I was like, "No, that is Katie. Holy moly." I was like, "All right, I need to get to the top of this hill because she reels me in from that far at the end of 100K. I don't know what I'm going to do." But it was kind of, it was really fun. Like, she was running so fast at the end. It was just world class.
So impressive.
Yeah. I started yelling at her. I was like, "Yeah, you machine. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go." And she's like, "Did you win today?" I was like, "Yeah, I did actually." But yeah, anyways, disappointed in UTMB. Do better. Okay, we have two more themes before we move into the actual race. Like we said, buckle in because this was going to be a longer episode. Sub Ultra Baddies moving up. This was the theme that I wanted to touch upon because for many, a plethora of reasons. The reason we started this podcast was to give exposure to the sub ultra space, right? Like the shorter distance races, highlighting the athletes within them, how to prepare for them. The list goes on and on, but also bring more attention to the fact that these races are very, very competitive. And I still think they don't get as much love as the ultras. Like, outside of our podcast, who else is previewing these races?
Nobody.
I can't. Nobody. Everyone always picks the 100K.
Yeah.
Like, and sometimes I get hopeful when I listen to another podcast. And, you know, they'll have some sub-ultra big winners, you know, on. But no one previews the 50K. And if they do, it's like 5% compared to like a 95% preview of the 100K.
Here are the three people we think are going to like be on the podium. Okay, next.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Let's move on. We have bigger things to talk about. So it's a big reason why we started this podcast, because we believe in these shorter distances. Like track and field, like, it's as impressive. It should be as impressive, hopefully, one day it's seen as that, to win a 50K as it is to win 100K, or to win OCC as it is to win CCC or UTMB. But anyways, we're hoping to close that. Long story long, two who I think are like great, great representations of how competitive the sub ultra game is right now, Rachel Drake and our very own MK Sullivan. They have mixed it up with the best in the world, multiple top tens, top fives, winning races for these shorter distances. They both move into golden ticket races for their first time, because Rachel had done CCC before, but this was her first golden ticket race, which is, like, in my opinion, a different stage. And Rachel wins and MK gets second. Y'all, I hope that's proof enough. Like, we're pretty good at what we do, like, in the sub ultra space. Like, that's proof in the pudding. And, you know, granted, MK and Rachel are very methodical, but a lot, like, they are representing the best of us, and they crushed it. So I don't know what else to say.
Don't sleep on sub ultra athletes.
Don't sleep on the east side. Don't sleep on sub ultra athletes. Because I think they are just the beginning of predicting this next crop of ultra athletes. No, like, I will die on my grave saying that, because there's a crop of us who are starting to get excited about the 100K. We're getting hungry for something different. We've been tried and true in these shorter distances where you're just grinding and making very fast race decisions is something MK and I were talking about. And, you know, you get to slow that down a bit. And, I have more time to make a decision now. I think this is just the beginning of it. So that's my prediction for 2024, is like, don't sleep on sub ultra athletes moving up in distance, please, everyone.
You know, I felt like going into Black Canyon, like, I was a little bit more of a contender for some reason. And then, like, for this race, I felt like there was like a chip on my shoulder, because I wasn't getting the same like hype. And I was like, you guys, I like trained again. Like, I didn't I stop, did you know, like, like, I even added miles this time. Like, what? But it's fine. The chip on the shoulder was good for me.
Yeah. You know what? And I super respect the people that are in the ultra space that are like, nah, this is a different ball game. Cause there's some major differences.
Oh God,
but
yeah.
but the caveat is when you take someone who is exceptional at the shorter distance, like Rachel and MK, it's not like they're going to stop doing their work ethic and their preparation and doing their due diligence with their coaches. If anything, they're going to try harder because it's a new distance and it's uncharted territory. And yeah, I just feel like you both have probably, you have learned a lot in the shorter distances and you're able to apply it to the longer distances. So
yeah, definitely. I felt like kind of what you were saying, like having more time to make decisions, like, you know, having started off my career with these like races where it's like, if you miss a move, like you're done. And this time I was like, okay, somebody made a move. Is it like, do I cover that or do I run my own race? Like I had plenty of time to make those decisions and it was nice to be in that space a little bit. But
totally. Yeah. And, you know, Adam Peterman did it. He went from 100K to 100 mile and everyone was like, yeah, he's a favorite to win.
Yeah.
So when you're, yeah. Anyways, I'll get off my soapbox. That was just the theme I wanted to touch upon.
Yeah, no problem.
Don't sleep on the sub ultra baddies. Last thing. Sorry.
Yeah, last thing. No, you're fine. Last thing before we get into like all the questions that you guys sent our way, was the prize money change. Cause I know that Danny and I put this in the newsletter for April and we talked about it a little bit. Last year when I ran the 50K, the prize money for the 50K, 100K, and 100 miler was top three, and it was 1200 euros, 900 euros, and 600 euros. This year, 2 days before the race, which I'm still a little bit confused about, but whatever, we got an email saying that the prize money had changed. Well, we never knew what the prize money was to begin with, but for the 50K, 100K, and 100 mile distance, it went through fifth place this year. And it was 5,000 euros, 3,000, 2,000, 1,250, and 1,000. So that's a pretty substantial change from last year, which I was very appreciative of.
Yeah, it makes us curious if the UTMB final will change. We aren't holding our breath for that one quite yet. But needless to say, when I opened this email on Thursday night, I was pretty happy I prepared for this race.
Yes.
And didn't just be like treat it like a B race. I was like, well, yeah. I'm glad I'm here to show up because I was fully expecting last year's prize money. But yeah, I mean, that's appreciated. They put so much hype into the majors. I think they should be compensated as such.
Yeah.
And
if you want them to be big, if you want them to be big, you have to pay people. Like
exactly. Again, why you did it 2 days before, not sure. But, yeah. It's appreciated. We'll take it. We'll take it.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. So on to some questions.
Yeah. So those were like our themes we wanted to touch upon for the week. Now we're going to get into the questions. And within the questions, we have categories. So we will elaborate quite a bit about both of our races. The first one, we thought this was hilarious, but we got two questions about whether or not I should fire MK. We're racing the 100K. Does Danny need a new co-host? Seems like MK has found a home in the ultra world. That was Jeffrey Mall. And will MK be replaced now that she's no longer self?
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, that was Mike Sinceri. Yeah, honestly, if MK didn't get a gold ticket, I was really considering it.
She left me and she doesn't get anything from it?
Yeah, what is this?
No, when I finished, Danny was there and somebody was like, all right, let's get a picture of the sub hub. And they were like, wait, MK just finished 100K. And Danny was like, I'm the sub, she's the hub.
Yeah. Today, yeah, that's what we are.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm running ultras. I'm sure Danny will try to run an ultra soon. I do plan on going back down in distance. But like, you know, we obviously don't really have to say this, but the whole purpose of this podcast is that we're just huge fans of sub ultra. We think that it needs to be elevated. Doesn't mean that's what I'm going to do forever. Doesn't mean that's what Danny's going to do, but we're going to continue to like share people's stories, share these results, and get you guys hyped on sub ultra, because I still think that it's the best way to get into this sport.
Oh, 100%. Way more accessible, no matter who you are. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. But if you have a very convincing application to be a guest host sometime, please send it over. We'd love to read it.
Yeah, Danny needs a break from me now that I've run 62 miles.
Yeah, exactly. Get that away from me. No, all right. The next area is training, which we got some great questions here.
Yeah, the first one is from MC Noah's, and they wanted to know what workouts were key in this build. Danny, do you have anything that stands out to you as like either a workout, I guess, that you finished and you were like, I'm ready, or like a couple of workouts that you were like, okay, these are just like building the blocks?
Yeah, it was an interesting block because I felt I wasn't at home the whole time. And I think sometimes myself, maybe many others, we get tied to our like at home routines, which feels really comfortable. With that being said, I kept telling myself that I was running with my teammates who are some of the best, many of the best trail athletes in the world. So just running with them it is like a huge win because I didn't do as many workouts. But the funny thing is that, you know, during the taper week, the witching hour, when you're convinced nothing's going to happen, good for you. I kept asking my coach, I'm like, but did we do enough threshold work? He's like, you ran two road half marathons. And I was like, are you sure that was enough though? He's like,
oh my
yes,
gosh.
That's totally, yes. He's like, you did better than threshold work. He's like, we didn't need tempos. You ran two road half marathons. And I'm like, okay. All right.
Right.
Yeah. So I would consider those key workouts for me. But honestly, the two workouts that stand out outside of that was I did a back-to-back long run, and the first day in that back-to-back long run was like long trail miles, super easy, just running up and down, just nothing added to it, just feel groovy sort of thing. But the next day I had an hour, I think roughly at like 6:30 to 6:40 pace. Oof. And the goal was to purposely run a, like not a hard downhill, but to run downhill and to do the tempo kind of like at the end of the downhill and then finish uphill. So I think that was a really key workout for me because I felt really good. Like I could climb on tired legs essentially because it was the last hour of a 6-hour weekend. Yeah. So that gave me a lot of confidence. And then honestly, the week before the race, it's so simple, but it was, I think it was 6 by 5 minutes, 5 by 5 minutes, something with 5 minutes. And it was a float rest. But anyways, all the 5 minutes were roughly like 6 minute pace, but I ran that in town at 8,000 feet. And I was purposely running on rolling terrain to kind of mimic the race. And it just felt so easy. Like I had some really rough workouts, but that one was one of the ones where it truly was like, okay, I'm going to be okay. Sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause there was some really bad workouts in there.
I can second that. Like,
yeah,
this was definitely the training block that had the most ups and downs, I think, that I've ever experienced. And I think it's just because I was running way, and you too were running way more volume than either of us previously maybe had, like for a block.
Totally.
And so there would be like one week where I'd be like, oh, hell yeah, that workout was awesome. And then the next week I would text Rick and be like, was that supposed to feel like absolute death? And he was like, not really. And I was like, well, it did. But I think my key workouts, one was that I had like definitely the biggest weekend of my life. I did a double long run that was, it was supposed to be like 30 miles and 35 miles. The first day being like pretty hilly and the second day kind of being more rolling or flat. And the first day I got 29 miles in with like over 7,000 feet of vert, did a lot of laps of our local hill here in Reno called Peavine, and actually like felt pretty good. Like every lap that I did, I got like a little bit stronger. And then the next day I had planned to do a 35 mile run from my house on the south side of town all the way to the north side of town, which is like slightly downhill, but I was still going to get like maybe 4,000 feet of gain. But we got dumped on like 6 or 7 inches of snow. And so I was like screw it. Like, this isn't even bad snow, you know, we're going to run through it. And so we made it about 10 miles into my route before it got like so sketchy and slippery. And we had to bail to the roads. So I ended up only doing 31 miles. And it was mostly on road, so it hurt so much more. But finishing that weekend, like, I did 60 miles over 2 days, and I had never done anything like that before. So that was nice. And then my last big workout before the race was 2 weeks out, I think. And I did, there's this hill called Rusty's Grave, which is a little less than a mile with like, I think 900 feet of vert. And so it's just really steep, like pretty hikeable, or mostly hiking. But I did 2 reps of that. And the first one I did 3 minutes moderate. I think it was either 1 minute or 90 seconds like walk. And so I got all the way up to the top and I broke my CR on the segment for it on the first round. And when I broke it the last time was before World Championships. And then the next rep I had to do 30 seconds strong running, 30 seconds hard hiking, just back and forth, like all the way up to the top. And I broke the CR again. So like, I was just like getting more and more tired. My heart rate was at like 180 on that second rep, because strong and fast hike, that's just hard the whole time.
Yeah.
And so broke my CR again. And then I had to run 2 hours steep after that. So I ran all the way to the top of Peavine and back down. And yeah, it was just a huge day, but I felt good the whole time and was able to keep my heart rate below 155 for the most part, going up Peavine too. And so when I finished that, I was like, okay, I can do anything. Like, I'm ready for this. It's nice to break like a CR that you have from a time when you were like, I'm on. I'm feeling good. Cause I remember when I broke that before Worlds and I was like, I'm ready to run fast. So doing it in the middle of a 100K block where I was running 120 miles a week for the first time in my life, I was like, let's go.
Oh yeah. I remember when you broke that before Worlds and you were telling me about it. Yeah, it is nice. I think it's important. I think it's important to have a balance of having indicators like that, that you're not visiting constantly to where it's driving you mad, but visiting here and there just to have some insight, because trail's hard to really understand fitness sometimes, but having like a same hill is helpful. But honestly, that road long run, I remember you also telling me about that. I feel like that might have been a hidden secret sauce, potentially, having that on your second day on your biggest weekend ever.
Yeah.
Road hurts so much, and canyons had so much downhill that, like, I think that was money.
That was the one long run in the block that I like wanted to cry on, and Tommy kept trying to, like, you know, cheer me up, and I was just like, I'm having such a bad time, my feet hurt, my knees hurt. And then so like when I was in that space at in canyons, I was like, okay, we've already been here and like we finished it, so like, let's just, you can cry if you want to, but like, you gotta keep moving.
No, I love that. So those were some key workouts. We touched upon it, but mileage, we both had our biggest mileage blocks ever. MK, what did you end up averaging? Do you remember?
It was a lot of like up and down. So like averaging, I probably averaged like maybe 105, but like I went from like 90 to 100 to 115, down to 75, back up to 115, and then 190, and then tapered. So like, because this was such a, like, so much more downhill, I think it was something like 17,000 feet of descent, whereas like Black Canyon was only 7K, I think it was way more important for me to get more miles in, because for Black Canyon, I was only running like 90 to 100 miles a week. I just didn't need as much quad loading as I did for this race. And I think that was like a huge part of why I was able to keep moving. Is like, just, those 120 mile weeks, like, didn't really actually feel as bad as I thought they would. And so then it was like, I was just ready for the race in that sense.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, I ended up averaging, I think, 95 miles over 5 weeks, which that's the most I've ever done. And there was some low moments. Like there was one day where I'm like, Terry, that's it. I overtrained. He's like, you did not overtrain. You're fine. I'm like, yep, I can't move anymore today. I'm like, today sucked so much. He's like, but you finished it. I was like, yeah, but my heart rate was super high. He's like, just give it 2 days. And then like 3 days later, I had a great run. I was like, I'm fine. Don't worry. All good. False alarm.
Yep.
But I think it's just a good reminder, at least for both of us, that like, it's not just what you do in this block. It's what you did in previous blocks for you coming off of Black Canyons. For me, just like years of training, well, both of us. And it's like trusting that your body can handle it if and only you do your due diligence and actually recover.
Yeah. And that's what my husband, Tommy, kept reminding me before the race was likely there was maybe only one other person in that field who has run as many miles as I have over the last like 10 years of my life.
Yeah.
Like he was like, you are so ready for this. Like you've been, I mean, in college, I was running 80 miles a week. I, you know, went through a phase afterwards where I was running like 65 to 70, but like Rick keeps me pretty high for the most part. And
yeah,
got lots of years in these legs. So that's what I just kept telling myself. So I was like, you've been doing this for so long. You're fine.
Yeah. And I think it's just a reminder, or it's notable too, because I was talking to Terry about this, is he is a big fan of consistency, because I had my first big week and I remember thinking, I'm like, oh crap, I'm gonna be able to drop down, and calling him up, he's like, no, we have to keep this going, you can't just do one of those. And I'm like, but that's the biggest week I've ever done. He's like, yeah. He's like, but that won't do anything for if you just do one and then go back to running 70 miles a week. And I remember us like really sad. I was like, are you sure? He's like, I'm kind of telling you have to.
You have to.
But yeah, just recovering and stuff like that. Dang it, I lost my key thought. It was mileage you were talking about. Oh, the other thing was recovering in the sense of like truly tapering. I feel like this kind of fits into training and starts to transition, but like really trusting your taper and actually like committing to the taper, I think is something that I kind of was reconfirmed about this time, because whenever I've tapered, I run really slow. And I think it's parts like subconsciously the body knows it's about to do something, but it's also part like, okay, you've done all the work. You have to actually soak it in. And so we dropped to like 65 miles a week, and I was running so slow, and just reminding yourself, like your fitness didn't just disappear, you know, before the race. And so I don't know, part of me just wanted to contribute the win to that too. Is like, you have to soak it in for it to actually work. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. But if you want to hear more about the way that both of us train, we each have interviewed our coaches in the last couple months. So make sure you guys check out that interview with Terry and with Rick. Because
Candid coaching.
Candid coaching.
Yep. All right. Let's move more on fun to stuff.
Race strategy.
And intuition/nutrition. Intuition and nutrition. Review of the courses from Catherine T8. You want to give a SparkNotes version?
SparkNotes version, super, super freaking hilly in the first half. The first 50K, we gained 7,500 feet.
Muddy and too, right?
And it was very muddy, yeah. And like the most technical part of the course too was like the first half. All of the descents were like fairly technical.
Oh,
second 50K was... so we gained 7,500 feet in the first half. In the second half, we gained six. So it was like, maybe not six, maybe it was five, significantly less. It was mostly rolling gain, which kind of hurts a little bit more when you're that tired, because you're like, I really should be able to run this, but I'm like having to hike it right now. Whereas in the early hills, I was just like, we're hiking. That's fine. Like this is steep. Don't matter. Hike it. But yeah, that's kind of like SparkNotes version was first half was super hilly. Second half was not that hilly. Rod Farvard, our 100K men's champion, actually told me before, like 2 weeks before the race, we were chatting and he said, nobody will make that big of moves after Forest Hill, which is the 50K point. And I, at first I thought he was insane. But when I heard at 50K that he was leading, I was like, oh, Rod's going to win this race and I'm going to be fine here. Like I still have to work really hard, but nobody's going to make a move on me at this point unless I let them. So that was nice to like have Rod tell me that ahead of time, because then I just had the confidence, especially knowing that he was in first. I was like, let's do this.
I love that. Yeah. I mean, he's learned that lesson the hard way of not being in the action early enough. So that's cool. I'm glad he said that to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. The 50K was kind of a barn burner, just downhill for 6 miles, 2 miles of very, very fast climbing. It was their kind of last steep downhill last year. So it's like asphalt, huge fire road. And then you entered a single track from miles 7 pretty much until, I forget how long that loop is. It's like 25 miles or something, 23 miles, something like that. But it's just constantly rolling, like MK said. So you aren't really ever hiking. You're just running the entire time. And just when you think you're going downhill, you're going uphill. And then kind of like one of the cruxes of our courses is you had a steep downhill to the river, one final climb. You finish on Confluence Trail, which was like a nice single track. And then you cross back over the bridge. And what you went out super fast on in the morning, you climb back out. And the worst point of the race, in my opinion, is Roby Point.
Yeah, that was so awful. Like that was when the camera was on me and I was like, really, guys, I'm gonna walk up this paved road. Thank you for getting this on camera.
Yeah.
It's so steep though.
The guy was like, you're doing great. Like, I don't, like, you're look like, I think he was trying to tell me like I didn't have to run. And I'm like, nope, I'm finishing. Gotta this. If I hike, I'm gonna want to be done. So yeah. I need to run up this. But yeah, that climb from the river to when you hit the asphalt and then the actual top, that's, I don't know how much you gain, but it feels like the worst climb of the whole day.
I think you actually, you gain like 1,000 feet over like 3 miles or maybe 2.5. But it like, it starts pretty runnable and it just gets steeper about every quarter mile until you get to the top. So it was rough. I think so.
I have no idea. That would make way more sense. Cause in my head, I'm like, oh, it's not that bad when you're running down it. Yeah. But then, okay.
I think it's close to 1,000 feet. But
that's wild.
Yeah. Okay. But both very runnable courses for the most part. I honestly hiked a lot more than I thought I would, but it, like, I'm glad I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to set your ego aside and just take it as it goes. Mantras? Is that what you want to do next?
Yeah. Danny and I were talking offline. I asked her if she had a race mantra, because I try to have one every race. This time my coach gave it to me, which was cool. He texted me beforehand and he told me to find a way to win. When my stomach hurt, find a way to win. When my legs hurt, find a way to win. Like, you know, whatever that looked like. And, you know, there was definitely a point where I was like, okay, I'm probably not going to win this race. Like, anything could happen. I'm not going to give up on that. But finding a way to win for me became like finding a way to hold on to second and not lose it in the second half. So that was my mantra for the day. Anytime I like started getting real down, I said out loud to myself, find a way to win.
Yeah, it kind of pushes problem solving too.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to win whatever this problem is right now.
Yeah.
Mine was contain the beast and unleash the beast. Just reminding myself that the race isn't won in the start, and that, you know, kind of contain the energy, let it stay stable. And then when I felt like it was a right move, just to gradually just Hulk it out and then just party.
We love a party.
We love a party. This is a great question from Brendan Runs. Sub versus ultra feelings. How bloody fast you two were. I love that. USC from the UK. What goes into dialing for race day? I think this is probably like prepping for race day. Yeah.
I can tell you that my plan, like, I had planned to definitely eat more before the 100K than I would normally before 50K. Like, I still eat a lot, but I was like, you know, you're going to be moving slower. You're going to be running longer. You got to eat a lot. But I was so nauseous the morning of the race. I think I was more nervous than I gave myself credit for. Because I didn't feel like sick at all that week, but I just like every time I looked at my second Pop-Tart, I was like, I'm gonna vomit. But dialing in for me was like just trying to figure out how to wrap my head around the day. Because I knew that if I focused on how many miles I had to run, I was gonna like not have a good time. And so I was just really dialed in on what my times were going to be to the aid stations for my crew, you know. And even when I was out there, I was like, okay, you have 14 miles, you have this many, like this much gain, it's going to be like 2 to 2.5 hours. Like, you got this. So for me, like dialing in on race day was focusing on the time that I had to be out there and how to manage it, which is completely different than a 50K, because for me at least, I usually just like send it.
Yeah, and I'm sure part of that dialing too was having Tommy and Helen there as well. Yeah. I was not on a new adventure quest, so I feel like my preparation was pretty similar to what it has been. But something that I was really focusing on this race was building my confidence and really believing in myself and like what I could do, because I'm really hard on myself, admittedly. And it takes a lot for me to build confidence. And so I was listening to a lot of rap and hip hop the day before in pieces, because I also listened to a lot of jazz because I really like to calm down. And yeah, I'm trying to think what else. I think it was just trusting that I would know what to do as the pieces on the chessboard would move. And it was like believing in myself and then not overthinking it. It's like, you've been here before, Danny. You know what to do. You're fit. Just do it. So,
I'm curious, what was the first song that you listened to in the morning, day of the race?
the day of the race, I think it was Disco Lines or something. It was like more kind of like disco prep. But my theme song for this training block was Eyes Closed by Imagine Dragons.
Nice.
And then I listened to some Jack Harlow. I really like him. Yeah.
The first song that I played in the morning was Cowboy Take Me Away by the Dixie Chicks. I was like, if anything's gonna be stuck in my head, it's gonna be this song.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine you don't want to get yourself too hyped before 100K. You're like out there for a long time.
I like Tommy was like, let's like listen to some rap. And I was like, no, we're gonna jam out to some Dixie Chicks.
Yeah.
Or sorry, the Chicks.
Yeah, I love it. That's great.
But somehow I didn't get a single song stuck in my head. Such a bummer.
Oh, that is a bummer. Yeah.
But maybe also a good thing, because 10 hours is a long time to have one song stuck in your head.
It would have ruined it for you. You wouldn't be
Yeah,
able to listen to
probably.
a song anymore.
So true. Next question. In a stacked field, how much are you pacing and just rocking your own finesse versus racing with some risk? This is from Adventures of Jen Thar. Jen Har? I don't know.
Genthar, do you think it's
Jen Thar.
finesse or fitness? And it was
Oh,
meant to
just
be.
rocking your own fitness. Could be either. I like finesse too.
I
Get a
like
little bit of
finesse.
drip.
In stack fields.
I,
Go ahead.
the 100K was like a totally weird experience for me, because I was like really, really thought I was having a bad day out there. Like, because I ran with Katie for the first maybe 7 or 8 miles. And then the transition between the dark and the dawn kind of, I like was having a hard time seeing. So I didn't want to roll my ankle again. And so I was like, okay, I'm just going to give myself space. And she heard that, like she heard me back off, and she took advantage of that. And I was like, okay, this, like, do I take the risk? Do I race with this risk and take and follow her and like try to do it? Or do I like remember the fact that I had to drop out of Black Canyon and I don't want to roll my ankle? And I was like, you know what? We're not dropping out again. So I'm going to bring it back a little bit. But like,
Do you regret that?
no. I thought I would, because I remember like Helen and Tommy being like, just go with her. Like, if she makes a move, just go with her. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's totally fine. But I don't regret it, because then like 10 miles later, I was only like 3 minutes behind her.
Yeah.
She made most of her moves, like I think on the climb to Michigan Bluff, and then after Forest Hill, because I fully thought I was still 3 minutes behind her until I got to Forest Hill, and Helen was like, oh no, she's like 15 minutes ahead of you now.
I'm jamming, I'm reeling her in.
So which is fine. Like, you know, Katie's doing Katie things. But so it turned into a much more of a pacing day for me when I thought it was going to be like more of a racing with risk. Although that I was telling Danny, there was some risk involved because I thought that I wasn't climbing well because I kept getting caught on the climbs, or like Katie would do a hard push on the climbs and I just felt like I was dying.
Yeah.
So I took
this Mary Denholm?
Well, so in the beginning it was Katie that was pushing me, and then Mary Denholm kept catching me on the climbs after I lost Katie. And so I was like, wow, I'm just like, my climbing legs did not show up today. But so I made the move to hammer downhills. I was like, it's not going to make my uphill legs feel any better, but like, I actually feel really smooth on this technical terrain. Kind of goofy. Like, of course I roll my ankles when it's not technical, but when it is technical, I'm paying attention and I'm sending it. So I just like, my risk for the day was that I was just going to hammer the downhills and see where that got me. And I think that's how I ended up making most of my moves for the day. Like all of the time that I made up felt like it was in those downhills. So
yeah, I think that's a good reminder that once you're in the race, you have to make these decisions. Yeah. And that decision ended up working out for you pretty well.
I ran into Ryan Thrower at some point and I was like, who'd have thought I was the downhill girly of the day? This is my jam. And he was like, are you kidding me, MK? You're like really good at downhills. I was like, I guess so.
I guess so. I love it. I love it so much. I it's a balance, honestly, because we went out really fast in the 50k. I mean, the 50k distance is just getting fast, but it was even where it was so fast that I even kind of was second guessing, like, oh shoot, like I need to back off because I'm gonna risk even getting on the podium if I go out this hard. And so, but at the same time, I knew I wanted to race, and I hadn't raced Jen. I had raced Tabor. There was a couple other girls I hadn't raced. So I would say I leaned more on the pacing myself and leaning on like that 50K experience and just being comfortable with space. I think that's something I've really been learning about myself probably in the past 12 months, is that I'm very okay with giving people space when I know I'm staying within myself, because that'll give me energy where I think is for my own race strategy will be better for me. It might not be better for someone else. So I gave them space and I gave them what I felt like was enough to be comfortable with, that I felt like I could close with. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. Give them space, but don't let them go. It's definitely doable, but it is hard to learn. Like, yeah. I'm still trying to figure that out for sure. Like, I would much rather just be right on somebody, because as soon as they start to get that gap, I'm like, oh shit, am I losing them? And usually you're not, you know, but it's a hard learned lesson for sure. But you're very good at that. I remember the first time we raced each other, the only time we've ever actually raced each other, was at Mont Blanc Marathon. I know. And you gave lots of space, and like minutes, and you ended up third. Like,
I'm comfortable day. With that. Wild day.
Next question. This is interesting because
we're just talking about this.
We were just kind of talking about this. Yeah. How do you sprint down the steep hills, downhills without eating shit? From Coach Caitlin. You go first.
How do you sprint downhills? I think in a race, it is a very conscious decision how you will run certain aspects of the race. So in MK's case, she noticed that her climbing wasn't improving or distance not going well, or the opposite, regardless of how hard she ran the downhills. And so she made a game time decision. She was going to send the downhills. My decision on the day, realizing that it was a looped course, was I felt that if my climbing was on, which it felt on, and I love running downhill, that I was going to give more emphasis to the uphills than the downhills. But also it was just, I don't know how to describe it, but it's just evenness. So as much effort as I put into the uphill, I put into the downhill. Whereas if my climbing wasn't there, I'd push more on the downhill. So I made very conscious race decisions. Like there was this one steep downhill to Mammoth Bar where I just floated down. I did not push, just let gravity take me. I took it as a chance to fuel again, I took it as a chance to like take some bottles or take a bottle out so I can get it filled up at the aid station. Like it was purely just get down the hill, don't push. And that was conscious because I knew that, in my opinion, the race was going to be won after the bridge, if need be. I guess I'm not answering the question, but how do you sprint down zero Fs?
I can, forward? So, I mean, the biggest thing is small steps. Like the bigger steps you try to take, the more risk you are putting yourself in because you're putting too much time on one foot. So you're like, the focus is to never be on one foot for very long. So the smaller steps you take, the better. It takes a lot of practice. And honestly, I will tell you, I can barely send a downhill like in training. Like I am so slow and cautious in training, but when it comes to races, there's just like something that comes over me and I just no longer have that fear. I think it's because I don't want to get hurt in training, like to get there. Whereas like in the race, you're like, well, you know, we're here. I might as well just do it. But I will say that it did take me a couple years to figure out how to run downhill well. The best way I think to learn is to follow somebody who's good at it and just like watch them do it. Because I mean, that's kind of how I learned, was running downhill behind a bunch of dudes who just like gave no shits about falling. And I did, and I was just like, okay, if they're moving this fast, like I'm going to move this fast too. And I mean, even in a long race, when I was like that downhill that Danny's talking about to Mammoth Bar, like I sent it a lot less than the others because it was at mile 55 or something or 54, but I was still keeping my steps small, like trying to like move pretty quickly instead of being lazy with my feet and like spending too much time on the ground, because that's when you're going to roll an ankle or trip, or because like half of the rocks that you step on might not even be solidly in the ground like you think they are. So hopefully that answered the question.
Yeah, but I think it did. I think it did. It's like practice. And I guess one last thing to wrap it up is my suggestion to people is work on your downhills in practice, and race day, hot take, I feel like you should never be like throwing yourself on a downhill unless it's the last one.
For Worlds, for example, there were two big downhills, and on the first one I was pretty cautious. The second one I was like, if I die, I die.
Exactly. Worth it.
Yeah.
Okay. Fueling. Okay, these are both fueling questions, so I'll just say them both and we can answer it all together. So from Laurel K. Awald, fueling for Danny's 50k since there was no crew access. Thank you for noticing that, Laurel. That was a very, very notable thing this year. And then your fueling, your difference in fueling strategy between 50K and 100K at Corefish. Okay.
We'll just do the first. And then we'll compare it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. No crew access. I was a little bummed about it at first, but I knew about it a couple weeks before, so I got like three runs in where I did race sims and I just carried everything that I needed, and even if I didn't need all the calories, I filled the amount of stuff that I was going to need, and I just filled it with water to feel it and see how I was feeling about the weight distribution and stuff like that. But basically I ended up deciding that based on my training, I was going to give myself the option to have 100 carbs an hour. Whether that ended up being 80, 90, 70, I just wanted to give myself that option because it's better to have slightly too much than too little. And then this was actually a huge topic in the Adidas Terex house the day before, because Eli Hemming, Tabor Hemming, Daniel Jones, Gordon Gianni, and myself. So there was five of us were all racing, and everyone was going to race with a belt. I think Daniel Jones might have changed his mind, but I was the only one racing with a vest. And I prefer to have all my stuff. I hate stopping during 50Ks. That's it. I rather just have a little extra weight and use that as part of my run. And then my fueling strategy, I answered it. I ended up averaging probably 95 grams of carbs an hour. I ate 200 carbs in the first hour and 45 minutes. And once I realized it, like, I realized it while it was happening, but then when I looked down my watch, I'm like, oh, I need to drink a lot of water so the blood doesn't rush to my stomach in the next like 20 or 30 minutes. So that was helpful. And then I think I ended up averaging like 95 carbs an hour for the whole race. Yeah. Oh, you're muted.
Yeah, and a difference between 50K and 100K, honestly, I did the same exact thing that I would do for 100K, or at least the same exact thing that I try to do for a 50K. Sorry. I would say that sometimes I'm a little less successful in the 50K at trying to get 90 grams an hour just because you're running a little faster and your stomach gets all jumbled. But for the most part, I can get at least 80 in. But my goal for both the 50K distance and 100K is 90 grams an hour. For the 100K, I ended up probably getting a little bit more than that over the time. I don't think I hit 100 grams like consistently, but like there were just awkward times between aid stations where like I was trying to drink a calorie bottle over an hour and a half, and I would only have 2.5 hours instead of three, but I would have two bottles and I would try to finish all of it before I got to the next crew station. But at the same time, I would then, once I got the next bottles, I would give myself, I'd be like, okay, you're 30 minutes ahead. You can take a break on drinking if you want. Like your stomach kind of hurts. Like, you know, just try to like be consistent, but you can take a little bit of a break. So not too much of a difference, honestly, because for the 50K, you need all those carbs to be able to run fast. And for the 100K, you need all those carbs to be able to run far. yeah.
I mean,
So I,
yeah,
yeah.
I was just going to say, considering that's your first 100K, the fact that you were able to eat that much, I think was money. And yeah, like MK said, I think the reason I ate 2 hours worth within 1 hour and 45 minutes is because the race started out so hot that my body was already just like burning through the sugar.
Yeah.
What Never Second products did you end up using?
So I alternated between like for my drink mixes, I would do C30 three scoops and then a C90. And so I tried to alternate that. And then towards the end of the race, I was just doing C30 three scoops because it was getting hotter and I wanted more sodium. I had a C30 gel every hour. So that ended up adding up to 90 grams an hour. Originally, I was going to drink less and eat more, and I'm glad I didn't do that because those hours went by fast. And every time I'd get there, I'd be like, I have to eat again. Whereas, like drinking, you're just kind of doing it the whole time. So it's like not that big of a deal. I was also surprised that I was able to eat the whole time because I was really nauseous for the first 3 hours. But I just told myself, I was like, it doesn't matter. You have to eat. Like, you will not make it to the end of this. Like, make yourself sick. So,
Yeah, I
yeah.
think we both do a really good job of practicing what we're going
Yeah.
to eat. So
I
I,
always anything over 2 hours, I'm practicing. Like
yeah. And like, what's it called? Because there are those moments where also like I felt a little full,
yeah.
and I've had the moments where I don't do anything. I'm like, oh, it'll be fine, and then my energy drops. And it's, but practicing it, I know I'm like, no, I need to start putting in water. So I don't feel that drop coming up.
Yeah.
So yeah, plug in Never Second again, Subhub 25. MK got a golden ticket using Never Second products.
And Katie beat me by 50
And
minutes using Never
Katie
Second
and
products.
first place, Katie Scheid, sixth overall, also using Never Second products. So
Yeah.
I think there's something there. The other person, or the last name we wanted to plug, is Vic Johnson. He on Instagram, I think he's Mountain Sports Dietitian. But we have an episode with him. This mad genius of a dude, he was out there. He worked with Rod Farvard almost like immediately after Black Canyons. After I on a race, I'm like, you should, or after a run, I was like, you should listen to our episode with Vic. I think you would like working with him. So you're welcome, Vic. You're welcome, Rod, for bridging that, or making that, what do you call it? A matchmaker
Yes.
happen. But yeah, you should listen to that episode because Rod went from what, like 16th place to winning the next one. I think Vic's method works. So definitely
Yeah.
consider checking out that episode.
Yeah, for sure. We're plugging all sorts of episodes today, you guys.
I
Get
know, I
get
know.
on it.
Get on it. A Subhub, what do you call it when you watch a lot of
Oh, I was gonna say it's all of our candid coaching episodes that like,
oh yeah, we're that's true. Hard. You should do a candid coaching binge. That's what you should do. Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. Is there anything else about race strategy before we move to lessons learned?
I think we just wanted to talk about intuition like a little bit. Just
Yeah, I think this is honestly one of my favorite things that we've talked about offline.
Because I felt like, and this goes back to like, you know, Danny and I thinking that like SubHub people are going to take over, you know, these longer distances, is when you're running the shorter races, like 50K and under, you don't have a lot of time to like make decisions. You just have to do it. And it might work out on the day. It might not, like, but you have to make decisions quickly. And I think because I have a lot of experience doing that now, the 100K was so much slower. Like I had to make a lot of decisions. I had to do a lot of convincing myself to keep moving and coming up with stupid reasons to get to the finish line. But I also had like plenty of time to make those decisions. And so I felt like, yeah, just having the subultra in my back pocket made it way easier to be like, oh, I'm having a terrible time on these climbs. We're going to send the downhills. I can tell that this person isn't like doing as well on the downhills. That's why I'm going to send the downhills. And then like, you know, later on in the race, just being like glad that I made those decisions and took that risk. And, you know, maybe I should have stayed with Katie longer, you know, maybe that was the decision that I should have made, but who knows? So I don't know. Yeah. What do you think about just like race intuition and how it kind of played out for you?
Well, I was just kind of taking in what you just said too, because yeah, it's like your pace was still really fast for the 100K, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
It's more that, yeah, it's drawn out.
Because
we're so used to just like, I mean, Golden Trail, you're literally throwing bottles and picking them up. Because if you don't do that, you're dropped. Like,
yeah,
it's so fast. Yeah, honestly, a quote that I really, really like, you were there. It was at Mammoth Trail Fest. I did like a preview with, oh my gosh, sorry, guys, my brain. She's from Flagstaff. Alicia Vargo?
Yeah, Vargo.
And she said, you have to race to learn how to race.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean like over race and race every single weekend, but I think racing with intention and finessing your plan, learning what works for you in the end leads to better racing. Like you don't learn that in practice. You never will. Because in practice you're controlling yourself, but in a race, you have all these other individuals making their individual decisions and you're reacting. You can't really like plan ahead. You're constantly reacting. And it's the experience that you could kind of lean on to make the right reaction to it.
Yeah.
And yeah, honestly, the main part of my race, I guess there's two parts where I feel like that race intuition and experience really shined, was the start. Just knowing like, this is too fast for me. I don't want to regret this. If they keep this up, they will win. And that's okay. Like, because there's multiple women in front of me. I'm like, if they keep this up, they are just a better runner than me, but I'm not going to blow up the rest of my day right now to battle it out and duke it out like 20 minutes into a race. And I'm really happy that played out. And again, trusting the space on the uphill, because I could see them the entire time.
Yeah.
And I kept looking at my watch. I'm like, we are running the same exact pace. They aren't running faster than me. They haven't gained on me. So I just need to do this until we get to the single track.
Yeah.
And then I can kick it up a gear. And then the other intuition was when we came around the loop, is I challenged myself to surge whenever it was runnable. Cause for me, running X amount of pace, I felt like would take less out of me than potentially other people that were behind me. And I probably surged like 8 to 10 times. And that's something that I learned I can do.
Yeah.
From doing that before, or else I probably wouldn't have trusted myself. I recently did that in the Mesa Half Marathon this year, where this girl was surging nonstop and I held on and ended up beating her. So yeah, I guess race intuition is experience in disguise.
Yeah. Just race.
Just race. Just race.
Yeah. Eventually you'll figure out what works.
I'm not a fan
you.
Of over racing.
No,
race enough. God, no.
Yeah. But you do have to race.
But you do have to race.
You can't, you can't just show up to a race and be like, yep, I've got this down. Like, you're going to have some failures for sure.
Yeah.
We've all had plenty of those, but yeah. On speaking of failures and lessons learned, look at that.
Look at that transition. Let's go.
All right. Last.
I hope you guys are enjoying this. We're in the home stretch.
Lessons learned out at canyons. Francesco Poopy says everything. What is everything that we learned? How much does it mean for our self-confidences to have the performances that we had? Danny, you go first.
Oh man, putting me on the spot. it does a lot. Because I have already touched upon it. It's my self-challenge this year to become more confident. Not cocky, like I know that I can be beaten on any day, but confidence that like I can compete and that like my hard work doesn't just disappear every race day. Like it's there. And like, I'm out here working as hard as anybody else. So I deserve to be confident. And like, I don't mean to make this into a love fest, but being around MK has been so inspiring for me because she is so confident that it's contagious. And it really highlighted how unconfident I am. And so she has been such like a great light for me in my life for that reason, besides being my co-host. So her confidence has really inspired me being around it so often. And so, yeah, I've just been really challenging myself to do that. And this race, you know, compared to all my, despite what the UTMB index says, I do believe this is like either my best race or tied for my best race ever. Because I pushed so hard throughout the whole thing, and you just kind of know when you have those days. And I feel that both of my half marathons showed, and like really looking at the stats, like 7:17 average for almost 32 miles on that terrain. It's just something that I'm walking away really proud of, and it's giving me fuel to like, you know that, yeah, I've seen this a couple times. Admittedly, I've said it too. It's like, oh, I'm so excited about my dreams. Like they kind of scare me, mm-hmm. sort of thing. And I feel like I've picked up on that too. It's like, oh, I should dream so big that it scares me. Like that's what some of the best people are doing. But I'm starting to realize that I don't think that's quite the nomenclature that really resounds with who I am. So I'm trying to change it to like, my goals are attainable. Like they don't scare me because I know I can do them and I'm going to do them. So yeah.
Yeah.
I hope that answers the confidence question. Does it?
I think it did. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll start out by saying that this race was a huge win for me. Like I dropped out of two of the last three races that I've run. I dropped out of OCC. I finished Mammoth Trail Fest. And then I dropped out of Black Canyon. So to be able to get to a finish line after what felt like a long time, definitely like is a confidence booster. But like Danny said, I have a lot of unfounded confidence to begin with.
It's not unfounded.
Sometimes it is. Sometimes it's a little delusional. But like, I've just always kind of been like that. Like in college, when I was racing my last year, I spent the entire year believing that I was going to win nationals in the steeplechase. And I got 13th. But prior to that, I had never even been to nationals. So it was like the whole year, I was like, I'm going to win. I'm going to win. I'm going to win. This race, I came into this race and I was like, I'm going to beat Katie Scheid. I can beat Katie Scheid. That's so unfounded. I've never run this distance before. Katie Scheid is one of the best athletes in our sport. Like, but I was like, I'm going to beat Katie Scheid. They got me to second place. Like, so yeah, I'm feeling pretty hot after this race. No, yeah. But actually it definitely was like, it felt like a big win after like the last 6 months. And same, I feel like this was, maybe Worlds was a close second, but this was definitely the hardest I have ever put out an effort, like consistently throughout an entire race. I mean, obviously there were low points, but yeah, I just like never let up. And I will say that I have to give huge props to my crew for that, because honestly, if they had not lied to me for 40 miles, I probably would have run a lot slower. But I legit thought that third place was 2 minutes behind me until the Confluence Trail. So four or five miles to go. And then somebody was like, hell yeah, dude, you're crushing it. You got 30 minutes on third. And I screamed, what? So huge props to my crew, but yeah, I think that was like one probably the best performance I've ever had in my career at this point.
Yeah, so well earned and deserved too. I think many of us at the finish line were feeling emotional for you. We're like, she just deserves this.
I was crying for the last 15 miles, I gotta tell you. Anytime somebody like said anything to me nice or just like hello, I just immediately started crying and said
they're like, whoa girl,
are you okay? And I'm like,
uncharted territory, leave me alone. No, I love that. Thanks for the question, Poopy. I think that's a great one.
Yeah.
Low points on the 100K. Did MK ever fall out a second? And did she trip or fall down? Go Nevada from Sariel Marin. So we'll do low points in the 100K, maybe two of those, and then I'll do two in the 50K.
The thing about the 100K is like
the whole thing is a low point.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of true though. Everything after 50K was like, I was having to come up with some really ridiculous stuff to get myself to keep going. At one point I had the thought that third place just was not going to pay off my credit card bill. So I could not lose second place. But in all seriousness, there were a lot of low points, but having my mantra was like definitely keeping me moving. Eating, paying attention to my nutrition was like getting me out of ruts, and just taking the day as it came and like focusing on what I felt best at, like with the downhills, it was like, okay, the downhills don't feel good, but they feel better than everything else. So let's just like focus on doing that. And you're a runner, you can run. So run the flat stuff, you know, and then just trying to hike as hard as I could on the hills. I fell out of second place for a total of maybe a half a mile. Mary passed me coming out of Deadwood the first time. And I immediately was like, ugh, no, do not like let her do that. And so I got back on her and then I passed her on the downhill, and then she like caught up to me a couple more times, but she never passed me after that. So I was in second place for the whole day. I pretty much ran alone for 40 miles from like 2 miles out of Michigan Bluff until the end of the race. I ran by myself, which is kind of a bummer, but I guess that's probably just like the reality of 100Ks. I did not trip or fall down once. I like was rolling around on my ankles a couple of times, but no, never fell. Definitely had some moments where I was like screaming because I would step on a rock and my feet were hurting at that point, but never fell. So I'm pretty stoked on that.
Nice. Yeah, shout out to Mary Denholm. She was having a really good day. She unfortunately had to drop out. I think it was like she couldn't hold food down at a certain point, but
yeah,
I'm excited to see what she does next. That doesn't surprise me. You were in that much pain.
Oh, it was like, I just kept thinking. And so again, the whole 100K is a low point, because I just kept thinking there's no way that this can keep getting worse. And every like hour, it would just keep getting worse. And I was like, there can't be a deeper hole than this. And then I'd find a deeper one.
I love it. That's so good. Low points on the 50K. Honestly, the Confluence Trail that MK kind of brought up, that's where I started to feel things kind of like, oh, that's a little tight. I'm going to need some water sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then I got very, very quick water. Sorry to the volunteers there. Oh, I was going to say PSA to all the volunteers. I'm sorry. I'm usually a lot more friendly, I feel like, but I was hurting. I was pushing hard all day. It was like more pushing than hurting, but yeah. I wasn't as responsive. But thank you to that woman who gave me very quick water. That was helpful. But the most painful, honest, for me was when I crossed back over No Hands Bridge and along the river, because I looked back and I couldn't see Jen, but I'm just like, I felt scared. You're still running scared. And I felt like I was running so slow.
Yeah.
But I knew, like looking at my watch, I'm like, no, I'm still running a good pace. It's just, it's the freaking 50K. I've been here before. And then the lowest of the low points was that starting climb out to Robbie Point. So Yeah. Yeah. Not jealous of how many low points you had.
Yeah, it was all day.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Any other lessons learned? I feel like we pretty much covered that.
Yeah. I'm sure there'll be more that come about in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a journey for sure.
Yeah. All right. We're going to wrap this up. Many questions asking if MK is taking this dang golden ticket. Woo! Oh, man. I'll just read all three of them. They basically say the same thing, but I want to highlight them since they did submit questions. Is MK taking the golden ticket? Feelings about running 100 miles at Catherine 8. Thank you for two questions, Catherine or Kathy. What now for MK distance focus? I kind of took that in the same category. At another Mike, another mountain. Love that Instagram handle name. Are you running Western States? From Joseph. At Jose Fuful.
Oh, it's Joseph Fuful.
Joseph.
I know who that is.
Okay. Yeah, so basically these are all directed towards MK and what do you have on the plan?
TBD, brothers and sisters.
Hey, we left you. We're gonna tease you a little bit longer.
Yep, I have the golden ticket in my possession. I am thinking deeply about it. I knew that if I made the decision on the day, it was going to be absolutely not, because I've crossed that finish line in tears. So yeah, I'm going to give it some time. Everybody who gets a golden ticket has 2 weeks to think about it. I don't know that it'll take me 2 weeks, but I'm going to give, TBD. Right now, my legs don't feel as bad as I thought they did, but if I get poison oak again, I might die. long story short, I'm not answering that question because I haven't answered it for myself yet.
That's fair. Yes, if you all aren't aware of the rules, what Drew Holman did was actually, I guess that used to be more of the norm, but now they give people more time. If I remember correctly, Adam Peterman also took some time to decide if he was going to accept his golden ticket after Canyons. But you do have 2 weeks, and the lowest it can roll down to is five people from, except Black Canyons, I think it rolls down to six because there's three tickets. So yeah, we have some time. We know it's close, but MK also deserved the right to decide.
Yeah, it's when close for me too.
Yeah, so, you know, stay tuned. That's the word. Yeah. All right, y'all. Anything else?
No.
Okay.
Just thanks for all the love out there on the course. You guys were awesome.
Yes, thanks for all the love. We got some last minute, like, y'all put a clinic on out there, no question. Just a big high five from at 320HPX3. No questions. You're both badass, inspirational women in sport. Thanks for all you do. Thank you, Elaine. We appreciate that. And how do you celebrate? Where did you eat? Ash at Josh do it. I had a bunch of Mexican food and then passed out. Or I tried to pass out. I just laid horizontal.
Yeah. I celebrated by trying really hard not to vomit at drug testing.
Oh, yeah.
Drug testing felt like it took my entire life. And then I made it through half a hamburger. I was pretty impressed. And two whole beers. And then I didn't eat for a long time after that.
Yeah.
So that was my celebration. I had a bunch of friends come out to the course. And so we all went and got a beer afterwards, which was so cool. So
yeah, that's really cool. Well, thanks all. This was a long one, but hope you appreciated it. And if you have any more questions, shoot them our way. But the next episode coming out this week will be about Sky Race Des Mathessines. That's the next race in the Skyrunner World Series. And yeah, subscribe to the Self-Help Headline.
Bye.
Bye.